Hi there, and welcome to the very final installment, the thrilling conclusion, as they say, of the podcast of Anda's Game, the short story that I wrote and published on Salon and was subsequently reprinted in Michael Chabon's Year's Best Science Fiction, or Best American Short Stories, rather, and is read aloud for you today by Alice Taylor of the Wonderland blog, a former competitive gamer who's now a media executive who writes a lot about games and is just the perfect person to record this. Her blog is also my favorite source of information about the games industry. This is the final installment, and when it's run out, I will come back with another story in podcast form, and that story is going to be human readable, a story that appeared in the anthology Future Washingtons. I'm not sure what I'm going to do after that. Maybe something older. I might record a podcast of something like Return to Pleasure Island, for those of you familiar with this stuff. My first week of retirement was very good, although even more busy than what life was like before retirement, because I had family in town, and of course when you start trying to catch up on all the things you neglected while you were overworking, they can pile up. But I did make good progress on the novel Theme Punks. I'm writing that a lot faster than I was beforehand, and so I really do hope to have that in the can by the spring. Your notes and letters have been really awesome, very positive and very uplifting, and it's been great to just hear from everyone telling me how happy they are that I've had the chance to quit my day job and how much they're liking the podcast and the new stories and so on. Thank you all very much.
Anda's Da and Mum were watching the telly again with a bowl of crisps between them. She walked past them like she was dreaming and stepped out of the door onto the terrace. It was night time, 11 o'clock, and the chavs in front of the council flats across the square were kicking a football around, swilling lager and making rude noises. They were skinny and raw-boned, wearing shorts and string vests with strong muscular limbs flashing in the streetlights. "Anda? Yes, Mum? Are you all right?" Her mum's fat fingers caressed the back of her neck. "Yes, Mum, just needed some air is all." "You're very clammy," her mum said. She licked a finger and scrubbed it across Anda's neck. "Gosh, you're dirty. How did you get to be such a mucky puppy?" "Ow," she said. Her mum was scrubbing so hard it felt like she'd take her skin off. "No whinging," her mum said sternly. "Behind your ears, too. You're filthy." "Mum, ow." Her mum dragged her up to the bathroom and went at her with a flannel and a bar of soap and hot water until she felt boiled and raw. "What is this mess?" her mum said. "Lillian, leave off," her dad said quietly. "Come out into the hall for a moment, please." The conversation was too quiet to hear, and Anda didn't want to anyway. She was concentrating too hard on not crying. Her ears hurt. Her mum enfolded her shoulders in her soft hands again. "Oh, darling, I'm sorry. It's a skin condition, your father tells me. Acanthosis nigricans. He saw it in a TV special. We'll see the doctor about it tomorrow after school. Are you all right?" "I'm fine," she said, twisting to see if she could see the dirt on the back of her neck in the mirror. It was hard because it was an awkward placement, but also because she didn't like to look at her face and her soft extra chin, and she kept catching sight of it. She went back to her room to Google acanthosis nigricans.
"A condition involving darkened, thickened skin, found in the folds of skin at the base of the back of the neck, under the arms, inside the elbow, and at the waistline, often precedes a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, especially in children. If found in children, immediate steps must be taken to prevent diabetes, including exercise and nutrition as a means of lowering insulin levels and increasing insulin sensitivity."
Obesity-related diabetes? They had lectures on this every term in health class, the fastest-growing ailment amongst British teens, accompanied by photos of orca-fat sacks of lard sat up in bed surrounded by an ocean of rubbery, flowing podge. Anda prodded her belly and watched it jiggle. It jiggled. Her thighs jiggled. Her chin wobbled. Her arms sagged. She grabbed a handful of her belly and squeezed it, pinching it hard as she could, until she had to let go or cry out. She'd left livid red fingerprints in the rolls of fat, and she was crying now, from the pain and the shame, and oh God, she was a fat girl with diabetes. "Jesus, Anda, where the hell have you been?" "Sorry, Sarge," she said. "My PC's been broken. Well, out of service anyway. Under lock and key in her dad's study. almost a month now of medications and no telly and no gaming and double PE periods at school with the other whales. She was miserable all day, every day now, with nothing to look forward to except the trips after school to the newsagents at the 501 meter mark and the fistfuls of sweeties and bottles of fizzy drinks she ate in the park while she watched the chavs pay footy. "Well, you should have found a way to let me know. I was getting worried about you, girl." "Sorry, Sarge," she said again. The PC bang was filled with stinky, spotty boys. Literally stinky. It smelt like goats, like a train station toilet, being loud and obnoxious. The dinky headphones provided were greasy as a slice of pizza, and the mouthpiece was sticky with excited boy saliva from games gone past. But it didn't matter. Ander was back in the game, and just in time, too. Her money was running short. "Well, I've got a backlog of missions here. I tried going out with a couple of other of the girls." A pang of regret shot through Ander at the thought that her position might have been usurped while she was locked off the game. "But you're too good to replace, okay? I've got 4 missions we can do today for your game." 4 missions? How on earth will we do 4 missions? That'll take days. "We'll take the BFG 10K. Ander could hear the savage grin in her voice. The BFG 10K simplified things quite a lot. Find the cottage, aim the BFG 10K, fire it, whim, wham, no more cottage. They started with 5 bolts for it. 1 BFG 10K bolt was made up of 20 regular BFG bolts, each costing a small fortune in gold, and used them all up on the first 3 targets. After returning it to the armory and grabbing a couple of BFGs, amazing how puny the BFG seemed after just a couple of hours campaigning with a really big gun, they set out for number 4. "I met a guy after the last campaign," Ander said. "One of the noobs in the cottage. He said he was a union organizer." "Oh, you met Raymond, huh? You knew about him?" "Yeah, I met him too. He's been turning up everywhere. What a creep." "So you knew about the noobs in the cottages?" Well, yeah, I figured it out mostly on my own, and then Raymond told me a little more." "And you're fine with depriving little kids of their wages?" "Ander," Lucy said, her voice brittle, "you like gaming, right? It's important to you?" "Yeah, of course it is." "How important? Is it something you do for fun, just a hobby you waste a little time on? Are you just into it casually, or are you committed to it?" "I'm committed to it, Lucy, you know that." God, without the game, what was there? PE class? Stupid acanthosis nigricans and someday insulin jabs every morning? "I love the game, Lucy. It's where my friends are." "I know that. That's why you're my right-hand woman, why I want you at my side when I go on a mission. We're badass, you and me, as badass as they come. We got that way through discipline and hard work and really caring about the game, right?" "Yes, right, but you've met Liza the organizer, right?" "Yes, she came by my school." "Mine too. She asked me to look out for you because of what she saw in you that day." "Liza the organizer goes to Ohio?" "Idaho, yes. All across the US. They put her on the tube and everything. She's amazing and she cares about the game too. That's what makes us all Fahrenheits. We're committed to each other, to teamwork and to fair play." Ander had heard these words, lifted from the Fahrenheit mission statement, many times, but now they made her swell a little with pride. "So these people in Mexico or wherever, what are they doing? They're earning their living by exploiting the game? You and me, we would never trade cash for gold or buy a character or a weapon on eBay. It's cheating. You get gold and weapons through hard work and hard play. But those Mexicans spend all day, every day, crafting stuff to turn into gold to sell off on the exchange. That's where it comes from. That's where the crappy players get their gold from. That's how rich noobs can buy into their way into the game that we had to play hard to get into. So, we burn them out. If we keep burning the factories down, they'll shut them down and those kids will get something else to do for a living, and the game will be better. If no one does that, our work will just get cheaper and cheaper. The game will get less and less fun, too. These people don't care about the game. To them, it's just a place to suck a buck out of. They're not players, they're leeches, here to suck all the fun out of. They'd come upon the cottage now, the 4th one, having exterminated 4 different sniper nests on the way. Are you in, Anda? Are you here to play, or are you so worried about these leeches on the other side of the world that you want out? I'm in, Sarge, Anda said. She armed the BFGs and pointed them at the cottage. Booyah, Lucy said, her character notched an arrow. Hello, Carly. Oh, Christ, he's back, Lucy said. Raymond's avatar had snuck up behind them. Look at these, he said, and his character set something down on the ground and backed away. Anda edged up on them. Come on, it's probably a booby trap. We've got work to do, Lucy said. They were photo objects. She picked them up and then examined them. The first showed ranked little girls, 50 or more, in clean and simple T-shirts, skinny as anything, sitting at generic white box PCs, hands on the keyboards. They were hollow-eyed and grim, and none of them older than she. The next showed a shanty town, shacks made of corrugated aluminium, and trash, muddy trails between them, spray-painted graffiti, rude boys loitering, rubbish and carrier bags blowing. The next showed the inside of a shanty, three little girls and a little boy sitting together on a battered sofa, their mother serving them something white and indistinct on plastic plates. Their smiles were heartbreaking and brave. That's who you're about to deprive of a day's wages. Oh, hell no, Lucy said. Not again. I killed him last time and I said I'd do it again if he ever tried to show me photos. That's it, he's dead. Her character turned towards him, putting away her bow and drawing a short sword. Raymond's character backed away quickly. Lucy, don't, Anda said. She interposed her avatar between Lucy's and Raymond. Don't do it. He deserves to have a say. She thought of old American TV shows, the kinds you saw between the Bollywood movies on telly. It's a free country, right? God damn it, Anda, what is wrong with you? Did you come here to play the game, or to screw around with this pervert dork? What do you want from me, Raymond? Don't kill them. Let them have their wages. Go play somewhere else. They're leeches, Lucy typed. They're wrecking the game economy, and they're providing a goal for cash supply that lets rich assholes buy their way in. They don't care about the game, and neither do you. If they don't play the game, they don't eat. I think that means that they care about the game as much as you do. You're being paid cash to kill them, yes? So you need to play for your money too. I think that makes you and them the same, a little the same. Go screw yourself, Lucy typed. Anda edged her character away from Lucy's. Raymond's character was so far away now that his texting came out in tiny type, almost too small to read. Lucy drew her bow again and knocked an arrow. Lucy, don't! Anda cried. Her hands moved of their own volition, and her character followed, clobbering Lucy bare-handed so that her avatar reeled and dropped its bow. You bitch! Lucy said. She drew her sword. I'm sorry, Lucy, Anda said, stepping back out of range, but I don't want you to hurt him. I want to hear him out. Lucy's avatar came on fast, and there was a click as the voice link dropped. Anda typed one-handed while she drew her own sword. Don't, Lucy. Come on, talk to me. Lucy slashed at her twice, and she needed both hands to defend herself, or she would have been beheaded. Anda blew out through her nose and counterattacked, fingers pounding the keyboard. Lucy had more experience points than she did, but she was a better player, and she knew it. She hacked away at Lucy, driving her back and back, back down the road they'd marched together. Abruptly, Lucy broke and ran, and Anda thought she was going away and decided to let her go, no harm, no foul. But then she saw that Lucy wasn't running away. She was running towards the BFGs, armed and primed. Bloody hell, she breathed, as a BFG swung round to point at her. Her fingers flew. She cast the fireball at Lucy in the same instant that she cast her shield spell. Lucy loosed the bolt at her a moment before the fireball engulfed her, cooking her down to ash, and the bolt collided with the shield and drove Anda back, high into the air, and the shield spell wore off before she hit ground, costing her half her health and inventory, which scattered around her. She tested her voice link. Lucy? There was no reply. I'm very sorry you and your friend quarrelled. She felt numb and unreal. There were rules for Fahrenheits, lots of rules, and the penalties for breaking them varied. But the penalty for her attacking a fellow Fahrenheit was... She couldn't think of the word. She closed her eyes, but there it was in big glowing letters. Expulsion. But Lucy had started it, right? It wasn't her fault. But who would believe her? She opened her eyes. Her vision swam through incipient tears. Her heart was thudding in her ears. The enemy isn't your fellow player. It's not the players guarding the fabrica. It's not the girls working there. The people who are working to destroy the game are the people who pay you and the people who pay the girls in the fabrica, who are the same people. You are being paid by rival factory owners, you know that? They are the ones who care nothing for the game. My girls care about the game. You care about the game. Your common enemy is the people who want to destroy the game and who destroy the lives of these little girls. What's the matter, you fat little cow? Is your game making you cry? She jerked as if slapped. The chav who was speaking to her hadn't been in the bang when she arrived, and he had mean, close-set eyes and a football jersey. And though he wasn't any older than she, he looked mean and angry, and his smile was sadistic and crazy. Piss off, she said, mustering her braveness. You wobbling tub of guts, don't you dare speak to me that way, he said, shouting right in her ear. The bang fell silent, and everyone looked at her. The Pakistani who ran the bang was on his phone, no doubt calling the coppers, and that meant that her parents would discover where she'd been, and then... I'm talking to you, girl, he said. You disgusting lump of suet. Christ, it makes me want to puke looking at you. You ever had a boyfriend? How'd he shag you? Did he roll you in flour and look for the wet spot? She reeled back, then stood. She drew her arm back and slapped him, as hard as she could. The boys in the bang laughed and went, "Woo!" He purpled and balled his fists, and she backed away from him. The imprint of her fingers stood out on his cheek. He bridged the distance between them with a quick step and punched her in the belly, and the air whooshed out of her and she fell onto another player who pushed her away, so she ended up slumped against the wall, crying. The mean boy was there, right in front of her, and she could smell the chili crisps on his breath. "You disgusting whore," he began, and she kneed him square in the nadgers, hard as she could, and he screamed like a little girl and fell backwards. She picked up her school bag and ran for the door, her chest heaving, her face streaked with tears. "Anda, dear, there's a phone call for you." Her eyes stung. She'd been lying in her darkened bedroom for hours now, snuffling and trying not to cry, trying not to look at the empty desk where her PC used to live. Her dad's voice was soft and caring, but after the silence of her room it sounded like a rusting hinge. "Anda?" She opened her eyes. He was holding a cordless phone, silhouetted against the open doorway. "Who is it?" "Someone from your game, I think," he said. He handed her the phone. "Hello?" "Hello, chicken." It had been a year since she'd heard that voice, but she recognised it instantly. "Liza?" "Yes." Anda's skin seemed to shrink over her bones. This was it. Expelled. Her heart felt like it was beating once per second. Time slowed to a crawl. "Hello, Liza. Can you tell me what happened today?" She did, stumbling over the details, backtracking and stuttering. She couldn't remember exactly. Did Lucy move on Raymond and Anda asked her to stop and then Lucy attacked her? Had Anda attacked Lucy first? It was all a jumble. She should have saved a screen movie and taken it with her, but she couldn't have taken anything with her. She'd run out. "I see. Well, it sounds like you've gotten yourself into quite a pile of poo, haven't you, my girl?" "I guess so," Anda said. Then, because she knew that she was as good as expelled, she said, "I don't think it's right to kill them, those girls, all right?" "Ah," Liza said. "Well, funny you should mention that. I happen to agree. Those girls need our help more than any girls anywhere in the game. The Fahrenheit's strength is that we're cooperative. It's another way that we're better than the boys. We care. I'm proud that you took a stand when you did. Glad I found out about this business." "You're not going to expel me?" "No, chicken, I'm not going to expel you. I think you did the right thing." That meant that Lucy would be expelled. Fahrenheit had killed Fahrenheit. Something had to be done. The rules had to be enforced. Anda swallowed hard. "If you expel Lucy, I'll quit," she said quickly before she lost her nerve. Liza laughed. Oh, Chicken, you're a brave thing, aren't you? No one's being expelled, fear not. But I want to talk to this Raymond of yours. Ander came home from remedial hockey, sweaty and exhausted, but not as exhausted as the last time, nor the time before that. She could run the whole length of the pitch twice now without collapsing. When she'd started out, she could barely make it halfway without having to stop and hold her sides, kneading her loathsome podge to make it stop aching. Now there was noticeably less podge, and she found that with the ability to run the pitch came the freedom to actually pay attention to the game, to aim her shots, to build up a degree of accuracy that was nearly as satisfying as being really good in-game. Her dad knocked at the door of her bedroom after she'd showered and changed. "How's my girl?" "Revising," she said, and hefted her maths book at him. "Did you have a fun afternoon on the pitch?" "You mean, did I get my head trod on?" "Did it?" "Yes," she said, "but I did more treading than getting trodden on. The other girls were really fat, and they didn't have a lot of team skills. Andrew had been to war. She knew how to depend on someone, and how to be depended upon." "That's my girl," he pretended to inspect the paintwork around the light switch. "Been on the scales this week?" She had, of course. The school nutritionist saw to that, a morning humiliation undertaken in full sight of all the other fatties. "Yes, Dad." "And?" "I've lost a stone," she said. "A little more than a stone, actually. She'd been able to fit into last year's jeans the other day." She hadn't been to the sweets shop in a month. When she thought about sweets, it made her think of the little girls in the sweatshop. Sweatshop, sweet shop. The sweet shop man sold his wares close to the school because little girls who didn't know better would be tempted by them. No one forced them, but they were kids, and grown-ups were supposed to look out for kids. Her dad beamed at her. "I've lost 3 pounds myself," he said, holding his tum. "I've been trying to follow your diet, you know." "I know, dar," she said. It embarrassed her to discuss it with him. The kids in the sweatshops were being exploited by grown-ups, too. It was why their situation was so impossible. The adults who were supposed to be taking care of them were exploiting them. "Well, I just wanted to say that I'm proud of you. We both are, your mum and me. And I wanted to let you know that I'll be moving your PC back into your room tomorrow. You've earned it." Ander blushed pink. She hadn't really expected this. Her fingers twitched over a phantom game controller. "Oh, dar," she said. He held up his hand. "It's all right, girl. We're just proud of you." She didn't touch the PC the first day, nor the second. The kids in the game, she didn't know what to do about them. On the third day, after hockey, she showered and changed, and sat down and slipped the headset on. "Hello, Ander." "Hi, Sarge." Lucy had known the minute she entered the game, which meant that she was still on Lucy's buddy list. Well, that was a hopeful sign. "You don't have to call me that. We're the same rank now, after all." Ander pulled down a menu and confirmed it. She'd been promoted to sergeant during her absence. She smiled. "Gosh," she said. "Yeah, well, you earned it," Lucy said. "I've been talking to Raymond a lot about the working conditions in the factory and, well..." She broke off. "I'm sorry, Ander." "Me too, Lucy." "You don't have anything to be sorry about," she said. They went adventuring, running some of the game's standard missions together. It was fun, but after the kind of campaigning they'd done before, it was also kind of pale and flat. "It's horrible, I know," Ander said, "but I miss it." "Oh, thank God," Lucy said. "I thought I was the only one. It was fun, wasn't it? Big fights, big stakes." "Well, poo," Ander said. "I don't want to be bored for the rest of my life. What are we going to do?" "I was hoping you knew." She thought about it. The part she'd loved had been going up against the grown-ups who were not playing the game but gaming it, breaking it for money. They'd been worthy adversaries, and there was no guilt in beating them either. "We'll ask Raymond how we can help," she said. "I want them to walk out, to go on strike," he said. "It's the only way to get results. Band together and withdraw your labour." Raymond's voice had a thick Mexican accent that took some getting used to, but his English was very good, better, in fact, than Lucy's. "Walk out in-game?" Lucy said. "No," Raymond said. "That wouldn't be very effective. I want them to walk out, in Ciudad Juarez and Tijuana. I'll call the press in. We'll make a big deal out of it. We can win. I know we can." "So what's the problem?" Ander said. The same problem as always, getting them organized. I thought that the game would make it easier. We've been trying to get these girls organized for years, in the sewing shops and the toy factories, but they lock the doors and keep us out, and the girls go home, and their parents won't let us talk to them. But in the game, I thought I'd be able to reach them. But the bosses keep you away. I keep getting killed. I've been practicing my sword fighting, but it's so hard. This will be fun, Anda said. Let's go. Where? Lucy said. To an in-game factory. We're your new bodyguards. The bosses hired some pretty mean mercs, Anda knew. She'd been one. They'd be fun to wipe out. Raymond's character spun around on the screen, then planted a kiss on Anda's cheek. Anda made her character give him a playful shove that sent him sprawling. Hey, Lucy, go get us a couple of BFGs, okay? The end.
And there endeth the story. That's it. Thank you very much for tuning in. I really hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Listening to Alice read it really just blew me away when I first heard it. And I think it was just perfect. Anyway, I'll be back soon with Human Readable in podcast form. It's a little longer than this one. It'll probably come in 6 or 7 installments. Talk to you later. Bye.